This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, joined, as we tend to be, early on in the week by Adam Burke. I did have to throw out a little impromptu weekend recap, look ahead, quick abbreviated podcast on Monday. But now we can really dive into it. His power ratings are up on VSiN.com. Adam Burke is here. And boy, Adam, there's a whole lot to get into. Unpack from the week ahead or week past. We got weekday games. We got a whole lot to dive into. But I mentioned it a little bit yesterday. Obviously, it's the big news circling the college football world that Trent Dilfer has been fired. I mean, it's a stunning result, but, you know, something has to happen down there at UAB.
Yeah, don't forget about Tyler Bray out at Oregon State, too. So, you know, a couple of really big coaching firings. I'm surprised that some other coaches weren't let go or that we haven't heard about other coaches getting let go yet. But, you know, Tyler Bray and Trent Dilfer, a couple of big names going down here.
And I think there was one other one somewhere in the state of Pennsylvania that's going to have a pretty lucrative buyout.
I mean, it's funny. I didn't hear Temple fired Casey Keeler already. I didn't hear that.
Well, a former Temple coach could be headed to Penn State at some point here. James Franklin out as the head coach of Penn State. And, man, you know, I talked about it briefly yesterday, Adam, but to think where we were about 2.5 weeks ago, College Game Day was on their campus. They had the whiteout. They get off to a slow start, but they tie the game up. They take the lead in overtime, and you're thinking, all right, maybe this Penn State team's going to figure out a way to win this game. Obviously, they did not. They go out to UCLA, who apparently all they needed to do was fire Deshaun Foster to become a juggernaut. They lose there, and then you lose to Northwestern at home. So, man, it is quite the turn for Penn State when a lot of people, and I said this yesterday on the podcast, Adam, I wasn't anti-Penn State. I just didn't have any exposure on them. I didn't think there was any, you know, air quotes, value on Penn State. But I certainly thought they would be a good team. I thought they'd make the playoff. But to be 3-3, the only team in FBS right now to not cover a game 0-6 ATS, it was a pretty big move, but I feel like at some point you kind of had to go this direction with Penn State.
Yeah, you know, I mean, look, we've kind of talked about this a lot, you know, not only this season, but also in previous seasons here on the podcast where, you know, James Franklin can't win big games, right? And that's what you need to do. When you're in the Big Ten, you've got like three games that you need to win, at least two out of the three, something like that. Especially now in the expanded college football playoff, like you've got additional margin for error where you can just kind of piggyback off the strength of the conference as a whole. I said it at the time when I was watching the game with Femi Abefe and Elliot Bohm and a couple of people who used to work for us here at VSiN. Franklin should have went for two. Well, you know, when they scored that touchdown late in the fourth quarter, Oregon defense had been on the field for a while on that drive. Should have gone for two. If you don't get it, at least people say, well, you know what? Franklin can't win big games, but at least he tried to win this one. You know, instead, you don't go for two. Allard throws the horrible interception in double overtime, and then you wind up getting to the point that you're at. But the one saving grace, I think, for James Franklin for so long was that he's really good in the bully role. When they're supposed to win, they do win. Well, they were supposed to win the last two games, and they didn't win them. So at that point, you've got all the ammunition you need, as long as the boosters are willing to pay the buyout and the donors and all of that. So it got to the point where it was just an untenable situation where, look, if we're not going to go 10-2 and beat the teams we're supposed to, then what are we doing here? So Penn State made a decision, and I completely agree with it. And honestly, if they didn't have Tyler Warren last year, I mean, this could have happened last offseason.
Should Tyler Warren retroactively win the Heisman Trophy? I think that's the question we all should be asking. Look, I said it preseason. I did a hit in, I don't know if it was in-state college. It was a radio station in Pennsylvania, and it was one of the hosts, a very big Penn State fan. And I wasn't going at him. I just said, look, man, if not now, when? Like, this is the time. Everything is set up perfectly for Penn State here. So we'll see who steps in to that role next. I was laughing. I'm like, oh, go, all right, here we go. Marcus Freeman going to be on the list for Penn State. I mean, My expectation is that Penn State's just going to call every single coach and agent and just say, hey, you want to come to Penn State? No. Okay. So my guess would be it's Matt Rhule. You know, Eumanns made the pitch on primetime Monday night that it, you know, Belichick would come out, or not Belichick, excuse me, Saban would come out of retirement for this job. I don't know who it's going to be. Logically, it says Matt Rhule would make a ton of sense, being that he's a Penn State alum and he's got ties to the AD, all of that. So I think there's a reason in far off lands, Adam, that Matt Rhule is the favorite to take this job. I don't know. And it's a good job, you know, and you certainly can win here. And there's a lot of talent in the state of Pennsylvania, and the DMV has a good connection there to Penn State. So, you know, Franklin did a very good job at Penn State, making them get to the level where they are. And they just want to go to that next level, and he couldn't get them there.
No, he really couldn't. And look, I mean, you know, the athletic department spent a lot of money to try and get them to that point, right? Bringing in AD Kotelnicki. They gave Jim Knowles a gigantic amount of money to pull him away from Ohio State. Now, of course, it seems like Ohio State didn't want to pay Knowles what he was asking. So it was just a, you know, an opportunity for Penn State to go ahead and get him. But he was a very, very expensive defensive coordinator hire. So they tried. You know, they tried to do everything that they could to surround James Franklin with enough people to help him win these big games. And yeah, they won a couple of games in the playoff, but they had the best playoff path of anybody. Especially, you know, in the early rounds of the playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know about Matt Rhule, honestly. I mean, I know the guy's a good football coach, but, like, he's a good football coach at maximizing a program that doesn't have top-end talent. It's a very different type of gig to go into a Penn State where you do get top-end talent. And, like, it's not this scrappy team that in year three, you know, gets better, goes, you know, 10-2 in some smaller conference, something like that. Like, this is a premier job in college football where you have mostly your pick of the litter in terms of recruits. I don't know how Matt Rhule would do there. I don't even know if he'll be the guy. You mentioned the connections. I mean, that obviously helps in college football. It's kind of nepotism sort of a thing in college football. I'm not sure people have noticed that before. But, you know, I don't know, man. I don't know that I would get excited about Matt Rhule. Just because I don't know if he can navigate what it takes to be a head coach at a premier program.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it'll be a very intriguing hire and a process. And, you know, you look at the jobs that are already open. It's the best one available, no doubt. But will Florida come open? You know, it seems like that's probable, but it hasn't happened yet. Wisconsin more than likely will come open after they got embarrassed, but still think Penn State's a better job than Wisconsin, obviously. Yeah, it'll be interesting how this carousel, last year's carousel, pretty quiet. Obviously, Belichick was the big fish, so to speak, and now, you know, we'll see how this ultimately plays out here. But let's just jump right into it, because obviously with another loss for Penn State, they now find themselves with an interim head coach, and maybe that's not the worst thing. So Penn State back at it with Drew Aller sidelined for the remainder of the year, and you've got your updated power ratings over on vsin.com. Right now, Penn State is now a road dog at Iowa. What do you make of Penn State? What did you do to the adjustment on them from a power rating standpoint, Adam, after everything has unfolded these past couple of weeks?
Yes. So, I mean, look, obviously you have to make a pretty significant adjustment, right? Because now this team, all of their goals are pretty much unattainable. You know, they do have an interim head coach who's not going to stay. You know, you're already starting to see some decommits out there in terms of the incoming class. This will definitely impact the transfer portal class unless they, you know, can move quickly and get a pretty big name. So, you know, just, I think a lot of those things kind of have a trickle down effect within the program, right? There's just a lot of uncertainty now, and a lot of guys who don't really know if they're going to stay, don't really know if they're going to go. You know, they're kind of worried about their futures and all of that. So that can leak over to the field for sure. I dropped Penn State 5.5 points. And I don't know necessarily if that's enough, because not only do you have this situation with Franklin, as you mentioned, Drew Aller's out for the season. Now, I'm not a Drew Aller fan, right? And I mean, if you've listened to this podcast at all this season, you are very aware that I'm not a Drew Aller fan. But because they don't have Bo Prabula anymore, who would have stepped in and been the starting quarterback here, but he's at Missouri now, they're, you know, stepping down in class, certainly at the position. Now, a bit of an unknown. You know, this is Penn State. You still get a lot of talent there. But look, I mean, I have Iowa minus one. So I guess that's a sign that maybe I didn't go far enough with Penn State in terms of my adjustment. But I mean, this is a team that I think has dropped maybe 12 or 13 points in my power ratings the last 3 weeks, which is wild for a program that's supposed to be one of the nation's, you know, top 15, top 10 even caliber programs.
Terry Smith, the interim of Penn State, said about the new quarterback, Ethan Grunkmeyer. I don't know if it's Grunkmeyer or Grunkmeyer.
Great name.
We have every bit of confidence of Ethan in Ethan. He's got a strong arm. He's athletic, super smart kid. We got a lot of trust in him. He's been thrown in there just like I've been thrown in there. So we got something in common, and you know he's going to be ready. How about the defenses that he has to face out of the chute? At Iowa, at Ohio State, Indiana. Welcome to college football, buddy. That is going to be quite the challenge. This is going to be interesting to see how it ultimately plays out. And how about Iowa, by the way, this past week? Who knew that they had the capability of getting an over by themselves, a 37-0 win over Wisconsin, and they were able to achieve the over all by themselves? So that this will certainly be quite the challenge. Total, looks like there's a 40 out there if you do like the under in this one. So, yeah, I mean, Penn State, look, they're one of the teams that you wonder, are they going to go the Oklahoma State route or are they going to go the UCLA route, right? Or is it somewhere in the middle? Because Oklahoma State has completely just gotten worse, which I didn't even know was possible. And UCLA has turned it around, and apparently they're going to win the national championship. So that's the big question right now as we look to bet on or against Penn State. What path are they going to take? Is it going to be more the Oklahoma State route, or is it going to be more the UCLA route?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question, right? I mean, because, you know, you look at this Grunkmeyer kid, you know, I mean, four-star kid coming out of the Columbus area, which is interesting. You know, it's always kind of interesting when Ohio quarterback goes somewhere else, because if Ohio State's not interested, that's kind of a red flag for me. Got offered by Cincinnati, Indiana, Missouri, Kent State, Northwestern, Arkansas State, a bunch of programs further down the list there. So I don't know, man. I don't really know where they're going to end up going, because there's still a lot of talent on this team, right? But the biggest issue to me, I think all season long, and you and I have discussed this too, and it was very, very evident in the game against Oregon, they can't run the football. And like with Catron Allen and Nick Singleton, like there's probably not a better 1-2 punch in college football, at least coming into the season. And they can't run the football. So they have problems in the trenches here big time, and defenses are just daring them to throw. So this kid's going to have to find a way to make some plays, get the ball downfield to somebody for them to have any chance at success offensively. And you know, like you said, I mean, coming out of the chute and right away facing Iowa, a team that's typically very, very good defensively, particularly in the secondary, I gotta think this. I mean, I don't know if it can get worse before it gets better, but I certainly don't see this getting better here right away, especially with the teams they have to face.
So Penn State 0-3 in the Big Ten is certainly a stunner. And if I had told you on October 14th, Penn State would be 0-3 in the Big Ten, I would say, did everyone get, you know, their legs broken? Like how? Oregon, okay, but losing to UCLA and then Northwestern at home would have been absolutely stunning. Probably not as stunning, but maybe after the week one result, it's pretty stunning. Alabama goes to Florida State and loses to FSU, and we're declaring that FSU is back. Florida State then, you know, takes care of business against a bunch of random jabronis, East Texas A&M and Kent State. And then they lose to Virginia in what was a really tricky spot with Miami on deck. They lose to Miami, and then last week they fall to Pitt. And now you're looking at a Florida State team that we thought might be playoff bound with the changes that they made, the pieces that they added in the portal. And now they're 0-3 in the ACC. What'd you do with Florida State from a power rating standpoint? Because after that week one result, it looked like this team might be back to what they were just a couple of years ago. And now this team hasn't won an ACC game in over a calendar year.
Yeah, speaking of jobs that might be open.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, this one has a chance to open up, certainly, with the way things have gone for Mike Norvell here of late. And it's just remarkable, man, how, like, the Jordan Travis injury, it feels like just completely submarined this program in a game against North Alabama that didn't even matter. But, yeah, I dropped them 3.5 points here. I don't know if that's enough, and the market's telling me it's not, because I have them a 20-point favorite on the road at Stanford, and they're 17.5, 18-point favorite. So probably haven't gone far enough with the Seminoles here. They gave up 300-something passing yards to a kid I've never heard of at Pitt, which is probably not a good thing for them going forward. But again, this is a situation now where you're talking about a team that you beat Alabama, right? And then all of a sudden you start thinking, as you said, college football playoff. Now all of your goals are gone. When you're 0-3 in this conference, where it's not a good conference by any means, but, you know, Miami's going to run the table in all likelihood. They have no excuse not to. Like, Georgia Tech is solid. SMU looks okay. Duke's playing really, really well. Like, now all of a sudden, you know, if you're Florida State and you go 6-6 or 7-5 and playing some lame ass bowl game, you know, in mid-December, or like between December and, you know, December, between Christmas and December 30th. Like,
hey, I call some of those lame ass bowl games. You watch your mouth, okay?
Sorry. I know you're on the sideline. Well, I mean, they're not going to play in the famous Idaho Potato Bowl, I don't think. I don't think they'll make them go out to the Smurf Turf. But, like, at this point, like, that's your ceiling now for Florida State. So this isn't just trying to figure out how to rate them from a power rating standpoint. This is also, what is the mindset of this team? Like, do they give a damn going out to Palo Alto, traveling all the way across the country? Like, I don't know. So, yeah, man, it's really tough to read some of these teams where their seasons are already over in mid-October.
Yeah, I do love that we have a 10:30 Eastern ACC game. It is a lovely thing that we have as college football fans on ESPN. Is that the Stormy game? I haven't asked her where she's headed this week.
No, she got Texas, Kentucky.
Okay. But Florida State, Stanford, 10:30 on ESPN. That does, I don't know. I mean, I take some ugly dogs. Stanford finding a way to win a couple weeks ago, and then going, you know, back to what they are, which is just getting crushed by SMU. But man, that feels like a tempting spot to take a big home dog in a spot that is going to be beyond sleepy. So we'll see if I have the courage to get there, because that Stanford team is, oof. They did beat San Jose State, so I'll give them credit there. But I actually want to circle back to Pitt here, because I think people who listen to this podcast know I don't have much love for the Narduzzi, but he made the right choice at quarterback, it seems, because Heinschel? I think it's Heinschel. I was calling him Heinsteckel. Heinschel, this kid is fun to watch, man. So far, two starts for him. He's thrown for over 300 yards in both games, and he's kind of looked the part. He's pretty athletic, ran for 64 yards against Florida State. So Pitt, I don't know if it's because of where they, you know, play their conference games, but you look at their schedule, the next three games they should be a favorite in: at Cuse, home to NC State, at Stanford. And then, not that they can, I mean, I guess possible they could make noise, but their last three games: Notre Dame, at Georgia Tech, Miami. So we'll see what this Pitt team has. It might just be makeup of the schedule, but there's a good chance that they're 7-2 going into a November home game against Notre Dame.
So, you know, this whole Heinschel thing kind of speaks to some questions I have going forward throughout the rest of the college football season. So we know what the transfer portal is like, right? And coaches obviously know it much more than we do. And there are a lot of teams that have been premier teams in college football over the last few years that have gone to the transfer portal to get their starting quarterbacks. They've let some other program develop them, or multiple programs develop them, and they've gone out there and gotten them. Will Howard, for example, at Ohio State last year. So will we start to see this shift where, you know, Eli Holstein's gone at the end of the year, right? In all likelihood. Yeah. So will we start to see this shift where maybe some of these coaches go, you know what? What if we let this freshman play? Or what if we let this sophomore play throughout the rest of the season here and just go ahead and see what they have? Because if we don't play them, they're going to transfer somewhere else. They'll go to a group of five school where they can start and then hope to use that as a springboard to come back to a Power Four conference, you know, for their senior year or their junior year or something like that. So I kind of wonder if maybe we do start to see a little bit more of this. You know, for example, a game that I'm sure everyone will be very, very interested in tonight or tomorrow night, Delaware and Jacksonville State. Jacksonville State made a quarterback change. You know, they brought in Gavin Wimsett, who was at Rutgers and somewhere else, Kentucky, I think. But he was their starting quarterback, and now they've made a move to go to Caden Creel. And Wimsett wasn't playing particularly good, and Holstein was playing okay. But I do wonder if maybe this is something we're going to see now throughout the college football landscape of some of these younger, inexperienced, but very talented quarterbacks getting the opportunity to start now the rest of the way for some of these teams that want to just hang on to somebody instead of having to deal with the shopping spree in the offseason.
Yeah, no, it's you know, there's a reason now that a lot of these schools aren't televising spring games, aren't doing spring games. They don't want you know, eyeballs on their particular players. But Heinschel looks pretty good so far, so we'll see. He'll be tested towards the end of the season. But knowing Narduzzi, they'll probably slip up in one of these next three games because that's just kind of what they do.
But then they'll win one of the last three.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Oh,
they'll probably win at Georgia Tech or something.
Oh, like, I'm as a Notre Dame fan. I don't know if you guys knew that I'm a Notre Dame fan. I'm terrified by that mid-November game. I mean, Notre Dame doesn't have Will Fuller for him to, you know, be stubborn and just play man coverage against when he scores three touchdowns on a Saturday afternoon. But yeah, that one will be a tricky one there, no doubt. I could just already sense that game will be a pain in the ass. But he'll probably lose like at Stanford or something like that in the early part of November. All right, let's get to a couple more teams in your power ratings. We won't get to all of them because I want people to read the column, which is up there each and every week. But let's circle back to Indiana. Obviously, we'll get a much more in-depth breakdown of the Hoosiers tomorrow when Wes Reynolds joins us fresh off of a trip to Autzen Stadium. But, I mean, that was a dominant performance by the Hoosiers out there in Autzen. I did not bet that game. I thought Oregon would win. I certainly had my questions about Indiana, but I consistently said this team is better than last year's team, and I think there's a chance that they could go in and challenge them. That all being said, Wes was on Indiana, Matt was on Indiana, and I give them credit. How about this? From a post-game win expectancy, 98.6% according to SP+, meaning the adjusted average, the adjusted margin was 16.9. I mean, this was an ass whooping by Indiana. I know it was tied 20-20 late. So what did you do to the Hoosiers, Adam, here in your power ratings?
Yeah, so this is the week that I finally had to admit that Indiana is really, really good. They are a top five team in my power ratings now. I have them fourth. I gave them a 3-point boost coming off of that game. And look, I always knew that this team was solid. Right, and that Kurt Cignetti was doing a really good job maximizing the talent that he had. Okay, they hammered Illinois, and I was like, well, all right, fine. But Illinois was very much overrated and overranked coming into the season just because of their returning production. They didn't have a ton of top-end talent. So I was like, all right, well, fine. You know, Indiana did that. That's cool. That's all well and good. But they still haven't beaten anybody that I think is, like, of great significance in the Cignetti era. Right, Ohio State absolutely pushed them around in that regular season game, then they were one and done in the playoff. This week, I had to say, you know what? This Indiana team is legit. They are very good. They're exceptionally well coached. Obviously, he's got the roster that he wants now after being able to find out who he had to work with in-house and then what he had to go out there and get in the transfer portal. And it seems like they made a pretty good evaluation here on Fernando Mendoza. So kudos to them for that. I gave them a 3-point bump. Honestly, that may not be the last time that I bumped them up because we're all thinking about it. If it's Ohio State and Indiana in the Big Ten championship game, I have Ohio State a 4-point favorite right now, which I would not have thought coming into the season I would have a gap that small at this point in time. But Indiana deserves it, and I'm not going to apologize for being on the fence about them for a while, but I am going to say that the people who pay close attention to that team are very much validated and justified at this point in time.
Look, they were validated for the jump that they made last year. I mean, their win total a year ago was 5.5, and a lot of us bet that win total over. I did. But did I think they were on the next level of being a top 10 team last year? No, and that was proven. And it, you know, I felt like everything was taken like, oh, you're an Indiana hater. No, I thought the market was moving too fast, and I lost a number of bets against Indiana a year ago. I expected them not to drop off this year. I like the pieces they brought in the portal, and they're much better than I expected. I think they're much better than most people expected. You know, maybe a couple homers out there, but I'll ask Wes this tomorrow. I mean, he's as homer as it is when it comes to Indiana, but I think he's relatively realistic. And, you know, for them to be this good, to be a legit national championship contending team in 2 years is quite the remarkable turnaround for what is and what had been the doormat of the Big Ten for so many years. Looking at the schedule moving forward, look, this is a classic letdown this week, but I don't know. Because Cignetti is a bully, and I mean that in a good way. I mean, they win games that they're supposed to. They don't really have those, you know, so to speak, letdown spots. It's Michigan State, UCLA, at Maryland, at Penn State, Wisconsin, Purdue. I mean, they're going to be a favorite in every game from here on out. What will Penn State look like when they have that game in Happy Valley? We'll see. But there's a reason, Adam, that Indiana is now minus 2,000 to make the college football playoff. It's them and Miami with those odds, and everyone else is, you know, minus 450 or whatever. So Indiana's going to be in the playoff again, and Indiana very well might not get the chance, Adam, to host a playoff game because they're going to get a bye. I mean, that's where this team is at right now.
Yeah, so right now, again, obviously tons of moving parts for the Nittany Lions. I have Indiana a 7.5-point road favorite in that game. Every other game, 19.5 or higher, 27-point favorite here this week. And speaking of Michigan State, do they just suck? Like,
maybe
that was the one of the worst spots imaginable for UCLA. And I realize that the Bruins are on another level now that they fired Deshaun Foster, as we mentioned, as you mentioned earlier on in the show. But like, that was as bad as it gets of a spot for UCLA. And they just took Michigan State to the woodshed. I mean, I think a lot of people expected Jonathan Smith would do so much more with this program. It's not really working for one reason or another. And, man, I mean, Indiana might put it on them this week because, you know, that's the thing, too, is like we were talking about style points, right? And some teams that need some style points, Notre Dame being one of them, like Indiana maybe would have needed them if they would have lost to Oregon.
Not anymore.
But I don't think Cignetti wants this team to let up at all. I just don't think that that's in his DNA.
Well, if they go 12-0 with the new
damned, I'd lay it here.
And here's the thing, Adam, you know, and I just looked it up. DraftKings does have, will they go undefeated? Yes is plus 105. No is minus 135. I imagine if you do the math, the money line rollover probably will be a more profitable endeavor if you want to go that route, Adam. But if Indiana goes undefeated in the regular season, regardless of the outcome in the Big Ten championship game, they're getting a bye, right? So the new rules are very much in play here. I guess I can't say regardless. Things could happen where Miami goes undefeated, and I don't know. I mean, we could get into scenarios there, but Indiana's in a very advantageous spot to obviously avoid the letdown because they go undefeated. I think they're, you know, very, very likely to get a first round bye into, you know, New Year's Day. So we'll see. But man, Indiana, one of the better stories. I want to circle back to a team that they will play. And, you know, you mentioned the Michigan State UCLA game. Look, I can gripe over the Auburn game or the BYU Arizona loss. I can't. There's no excuse. Like, I gave out a bad bet. I made a bad bet. I was on Michigan State. I thought it was a terrible spot for UCLA. I thought they just kind of came together for one game. Apparently not. Apparently this UCLA team is going to be a force to be reckoned with. And maybe even with a pretty challenging schedule, we might have to talk about them making a bowl game. I doubt it, obviously, with them playing Indiana, Nebraska, Ohio State, Washington, and USC. But they're going to be a pain in the ass, it certainly seems like. They're a favorite this weekend against Maryland. And, you know, look, UCLA has now cost me money in two different ways. I bet their adjusted win total under 1.5 at plus money. That's a loser. And then I bet them, bet against them last week. So I don't know what the hell to do with them this weekend when they're back at home at the Rose Bowl against Maryland, who is just, I mean, talk about a team that's had their guts ripped out in back-to-back weeks, Adam. Up 20-0 against Washington, and they lose that game 24-20. And then they were up 10 on Nebraska. Oh, no, up a touchdown on Nebraska and squander that lead in the fourth quarter. So how does Maryland get back off the mat to go out to UCLA against apparently the hottest team in college football?
Yeah, and this will be an interesting one to watch, too, because there's some winnable games left for Maryland. But, is this another job that comes open after the good start to the season? You know, if they don't even make a bowl game or something like that, they should. But if they don't, you know, maybe this is a job that comes open. I bumped UCLA 5 points, and I have Maryland a 1.5 point favorite in this game. So clearly I haven't adjusted Maryland down enough for the way they've been unable to finish off football games here. Because I think I'm pretty good from a market standpoint on UCLA. But Maryland is a team that I guess has just kind of fallen through the cracks a little bit, especially because they played largely, you know, three pretty good quarters in their last two games, but they haven't been able to finish it off. So we'll see if they can finish it off here. But, you know, obviously, again, like the long travel in the Big Ten, the ACC, stuff like that, the market is very cognizant of that. Typically tends to, you know, back the home team pretty aggressively in those long travel spots. Of course, you got a perfect storm here with UCLA getting a lot better. I'm probably going to take Maryland plus 3.5 because they'll find some way to lose this game in the fourth quarter. But, you know, maybe they'll at least find a way to stay within, you know, a field goal, something like that.
Yeah, we talked and we played the interview on the podcast over the summer. We talked to Mike Locksley at Big Ten Media Day. And, you know, I was impressed by Coach Locksley and his demeanor. His willingness to accept fault. I mean, you know how these coaches talk. I mean, they're glorified politicians, essentially. But he was very kind of humbled about last year. And I was excited about this Maryland team. Still might be. I mean, look, their win total was 4.5, and they're 4-2. And they lost to Washington, and they lost to Nebraska. Two games they were expected to lose, and they actually covered both of them. So I know it was gut-wrenching, and I'm sure somewhere out there Scott Van Pelt is ripping out any of the hair that he has on his head, you know, because of these two losses. But they're not a bad football team, but I don't know what to do with UCLA. I mean, apparently they're just a damn juggernaut. And, you know, I think you made a good point. You know, UCLA is a program that is not believed to have a ton of cash, and they get these couple of big wins. Jerry Neuheisel's, you know, the talk of the town, even though Tim Skipper is the interim head coach. Their schedule is brutal outside of this Maryland game, right? Indiana, Nebraska, Ohio State, Washington, a team that I really like, and then you finish up against USC. But Tim Skipper could be in line to get this job. They could say, hey, let's run this thing back. Skipper and Neuheisel, 2026.
I would be really, really surprised if Tim Skipper gets the head coaching job. I think what's really nice here for UCLA is that they've gotten people a little bit excited about the program based on what's happened since they let Foster go. And then when they get pummeled late in the year because the level of competition really steps up, they can go, thanks, Tim. Great job. Really appreciate it. But you're not our guy. Because, look, they went the cheap, very easy route with Deshaun Foster when Chip Kelly left them high and dry. So I don't think they can do that again. I think they have to go out there and actually get a name. I don't know who that name may be, but I think they have to go out there and get a name.
Marcus Freeman. I mean, it's just getting thrown around, so, you know, might as well just throw it out there.
UCLA head coach Bronco Mendenhall?
Ooh.
I don't know if you'd want that because, you know,
UCLA coach Jed Fish is probably their number one hope is to have him come back home.
I wouldn't leave Washington. No, I'm not leaving Washington.
Unless he's got Damon Williams, you know, coming with him. I'm not leaving Washington. No way. I know that's their number one hope.
I will say this, though. In thinking about UCLA's game here this week against Maryland, I'm sitting here processing and talking myself into taking Maryland because you remember earlier this year, wasn't it? Or was it last year? Where Lincoln Riley bitched and complained about the schedule, where he's like, oh, you know, we had to go all the way east. And then it's a short week of practice for us because we're coming all the way back. And then we play this home game and all this different type of thing. For UCLA, I mean, after the bye, they had a week four bye. They had to go to Evanston. Then they hosted Penn State in that game that they, you know, shocked the world. Then they had to go all the way out to East Lansing. Now they're at home against a Maryland team that you're probably not going to get super jazzed up to play against. And then you get Indiana, where you just knocked off Penn State, so you're thinking you could be a world beater. I wonder if this is a week where everything just kind of hits a wall for UCLA. I could be dead wrong, and they blow out Maryland. It's a possibility. But I just kind of wonder, like, there's only so many weeks you can keep getting back up with all this travel and trying to pay attention to school and all of that, right?
Well, and let's look at Maryland real quickly. I didn't anticipate to do a deep dive on a 4-2 team in the Big Ten, but that's kind of what we do in the early week here. You know, Maryland goes to Wisconsin. We now know Wisconsin's an absolute dumpster fire, but they go out there and they dominate, which was at the time an impressive result for Maryland. And the last 2 weeks, granted, they got Washington, I thought, at an unbelievable spot where they were coming off a bye, Maryland, and Washington had just played Ohio State. And prior to that, they played their rival in Wazoo. So it was a great spot. They go up 20-0. They blow that lead. And then they're up on Nebraska. Look, a Nebraska team that's now 5-1, a fringe top 25 team. And you have a lead in the fourth quarter against Nebraska. So we do, you know, and we'll do it here on the other side of a break, overreaction or market correction. Granted, there was no look-ahead line for Maryland-UCLA, sadly. But I think you got to ask the question, is it a market correction or is it an overreaction to UCLA now being a 3.5-point favorite when I think in many people's eyes, they were, after they lost to New Mexico, which obviously was the lowest of low points for them, I mean, they were probably going to be a touchdown underdog, if not more, against Maryland in this spot. So they've been so much better, but are they that much better? I mean, that's what we got to figure out as bettors, right, in this particular spot. And I might be with you here. I might hold my nose and take Maryland and take a beating again from UCLA. But now they're laying points as opposed to getting over a touchdown.
Well, and I also think, too, that, you know, again, we're recording this on Tuesday morning Pacific time. Like, four probably shows up here, right? Because
yeah, I don't think there's
no reason to jump in now. I think you can wait on this game.
Yeah,
and sit on
it. Who wants to bet Maryland
Saturday? Right. Yeah, no one wants to bet Maryland. UCLA's got all this momentum. They're the talk of college football right now. You know, they kind of kickstarted the James Franklin downfall. You know, all of that. I mean, yeah, shit, 4.5 might even be a thing.
Yeah, I think you wait and see how this ultimately plays out. All right, I mentioned, let's take a quick break, but just a reminder, folks, our VSiN College Football Betting Broadcast has been brought to you by Rainbow Authentics all year. What a time, man, to be pumped up for Hawaii football, the official source of game-used apparel, autographs, trading cards, everything you could imagine for Hawaii student-athletes. Every item tells a story, whether it's a game-worn jersey, a signed ball, or unique collectibles. You're capturing the moment and owning a piece of history. Check them out, rainbowauthentics.com. They got hats like the one I'm wearing here. A couple other shirts, I believe, are in the works that we might be donning on the podcast here at some point. So mahalo to our friends Rainbow Authentics, a proud sponsor all year long of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I mentioned it briefly yesterday on the pod, and you update elevated Hawaii after their performance. That was really impressive, in my opinion, what I saw from them late on Saturday night. And Hawaii now one win away from bowl eligibility. That was kind of the goal heading into this year. Their win total was 5.5. And now tricky parts of the schedule, and it looks like maybe Colorado State arose from the dead, but this is a spot where I'm a little surprised to see Hawaii as an underdog in Fort Collins.
Yeah, this is probably my biggest overlay of the week. I have Hawaii a 7.5-point favorite in this game, so I am way off the market here. I realize traveling to the mainland is something that Hawaii gets punished for, and I haven't looked at the weather forecast, to be fair, so I don't know if it's going to be cold in Fort Collins or anything like that. That could be problematic, but look, I mean, Mike Alajado got hurt earlier on in the season, you know, in that Stanford game pretty much. They got blown out by Arizona in a game where he just wasn't himself at all whatsoever. And takes a couple weeks off, plays a couple games, and they get a bye. It sure seems like he's as close to 100% as you can be this deep in the college football season, back-to-back, putting up four Bills against Air Force and Utah State with a bye in between. And look, I mean, also, you know, you don't want to be sitting there on five wins for a long period of time. You want to punch your bowl eligibility ticket as fast as possible. I think they win this week in Fort Collins, and then they have a bye, and then they play San Jose State. I think they win that game, too. So, very impressive season for the Rainbow Warriors and for Timmy Chang up there. And Mike Alejandro looks like the real deal, man.
He's impressive, and I know Hawaii is going to be working hard to try to keep him. He is from Honolulu, so that is helpful in that regard. But they got some receivers, man. It's impressive. Jackson Harris, Pafeli Ashlock, Brandon White, Nick Senecal, they're all healthy right now. So their schedule's pretty intriguing down the stretch here when you look at how they have so many byes still remaining. You mentioned it. They got Colorado State bye. Then they play two games, another bye. So, look, I'm going to be at that UNLV game in late November. Man, that might have been the most entertaining game of the college football season to date. UNLV Air Force, I don't know how much eyes you got on this one. UNLV gets the win. Air Force gets the cover. The Fly Guys can't stop a cold, but man, they're fun offensively. How about the points or the yardage in this one? 603 and 597. Even a math dummy like me can count that to 1,200 yards of offense at Allegiant Stadium on Saturday.
Yeah, I had the over in that game, so I wish that they could all be as easy. Yeah, I mean, in the fourth quarter, it was just wild of that football game. Look, we talked about it here on the show, and I mean, you know, people may be like, I don't really care to hear about these teams, but it's important to hear about these types of teams. Like, with Air Force going to Liam Zarka as the quarterback, like, this dude can actually throw, which makes Air Force's offense so much more dangerous. But to your point, they are pathetic on the defensive side. Game on paper, this is interesting here. EPA per play, Air Force in the 91st percentile, UNLV in the 98th percentile. Success rate, Air Force 95th percentile, UNLV 98th percentile. So, yeah, just all sorts of offense, 16 explosive plays in the game. I will say, though, just I don't want to, you know, get into this too much because I know we're going to take a break, but UNLV's offense with Dan Mullen looks quite good. Man, has their defense taken a step back without Barry Odom.
I would totally agree. And I'll say this about UNLV. I ended up taking Air Force. I thought the number was elevated. Every Saturday on the tailgate show, we have Chuck Esposito on. And for those who don't know Chuck, he's the race and sportsbook director at the Red Rock Casino, which is a local shop here in Vegas, and their company Stations is only located in Nevada. So his numbers are always skewed when it comes to UNLV games. 93% of bets were on UNLV. And because of that, I was able to get a 7.5 with UNLV at Stations. So that was pretty lovely. So was able to cash that. But man, I don't know what to make of this UNLV team because, yeah, we're going to take a break. But a game that is pretty, you know, all kidding aside, it's a big game this weekend with Boise State and UNLV, with two teams that are very much in the thick of it for the Mountain West. The market has bet up Boise here to 11.5. There's a 12.5 at FanDuel. I don't know if UNLV can stop Boise State, but that being said, Adam, I think UNLV's got the ability to put up some points on Boise. So this is an intriguing one. I'm kind of sad it's not late night. I would have loved to see this late night on the Smurf turf. It's a mid-afternoon game, but that's a pretty big one this week in the G5, UNLV at Boise.
Well, and something else, I think this is a really important talking point here. So UNLV, you know, they played that game on the road in Wyoming, and the weather was horrible. I mean, there was a hailstorm where it looked like they were playing in a, you know, in snowfall. There was lightning and, you know, thunder and wind and all these different types of things. So UNLV did virtually nothing offensively. And Anthony Calandria looked terrible. But then this was a total that shortly after it opened on Sunday at Circa got bet up to 70. It went all the way down to 64.5 at some shops before you saw buyback to 66.5. And to me, like, I don't know who thought betting the under in this game was a good idea, but that's why it's really important to put these things into the proper context, because weather's going to start being a little bit more of a factor. get a dome team, go outside, you know, in a warm weather climate to play in a, you know, 39 degree game at Wyoming. Yeah, of course they struggled on offense. So that was one where I think people didn't apply the right context to the previous data point for UNLV. And of course, then they went out there and scored 51 points. So just something for you to keep in mind here is that, you know, it's not enough to just look at box scores or, you know, look at line moves or anything like that. You've got to apply context to all of these results. And so I thought it was a cheap number on the over. If the weather is fine in Wyoming and UNLV scores like 35 points, well, they scored 31 anyway, but they had two blocked punts.
Yeah, I was going to say they blocked two punts.
Right. But like, so this is an example, again, weather's going to be a factor moving forward. You may get some good value if you're simply able to apply context to the previous result and not overreact to it.
As of right now, and subject to change, looks like 65 and sunny in Boise on Saturday. So weather shouldn't be a factor. But that's another fun one. It's a loaded slate. We got some weekday games we'll hit on here. Some of the overlays that you have, Adam, based off your power numbers on VSiN.com. But let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take a look at some of the weekday games as they're here, folks. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We got college football almost every single day. Quick break. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. Adam Burke, Tim Murray. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Adam, it is a very busy time of year. I'm wasting your time right now because you could be focusing on all the guides we're putting out, all the content we've got on VSiN.com. What kind of offers do we have rolling over on the website?
Yeah, so a week ago, if you're listening to us here on Tuesday, we released our 2025-26 NBA betting guide. That season starts October 21st, so you definitely want to, if you want to bet the NBA, there's no better way to get prepared for the season than to check out our NBA betting guide. All 30-team previews from Zachary Cohen, a couple of feature articles from Jonathan Von Tobel. We got all kinds of live betting tips in there as well, best bets from our VSiN hosts and contributors, so that guide's still very, very relevant. Still a lot more shelf life on that. This is a college football podcast. We got college basketball coverage at VSiN.com as well. And the college basketball betting guide comes out October 23rd. So a week from Thursday for that one. The season starts the first Monday of November, which I believe is November 3rd. So this one's out 10 days in advance of the season. But yeah, head to VSiN.com/subscribe. Check out our subscription options. If you're on the fence, you can do a 1 month $9.99 offer. You know, no obligation. If you don't want to stick around, you don't have to. We hope that you do. But it gives you a chance. You know, you're gonna get two guides in that month for $9.99. Like, I can tell you from buying other preseason guides and all of that, you can't get one for $9.99. And we're gonna give you two of them. So head to VSiN.com/subscribe and check out what we have to offer. And if you're not sure just yet, we will have a big Sports Equinox offer coming up, as that's October 27th. So that'll be coming here soon, but don't wait so you can get it, you know, get out in front of the NBA season.
All right. I got a tweet queued up and I want to bring it to your attention because you are a Mac guy through and through, and we are getting close to Maction. And I wanted to point this out. Since 2021, the best team against the spread as an underdog is Toledo. The Rockets are 8-1 ATS as an underdog, so covering at almost 89%. Over the weekend, we saw it happen again. A guy that no doubt wants to find himself somewhere else, Jason Candle, lost as a big favorite again, and another true Midwesterner, Brad Powers, tweeted out, Toledo has now lost 17 times outright as a favorite since 2021. 12 of those have come as a favorite of at least 7 points, by far the most in the nation. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Jason Candle.
Yeah, not great, huh? And if you look at Parker Fleming at Stats of War, who I know has been a guest on our VSiN shows and all that, Did we really get beat that bad? The net success rate chart that he has that he puts up after all the games are finished. I don't think I've seen one as lopsided as Toledo and Bowling Green, where Bowling Green was awful in this football game and still won 28-23. So, yeah, I mean, look, if you're happy going 8-4 every year, like Toledo seems to be, then you can keep Jason Candle around. But if you want to try to take this to the next level, that can't happen. You can't lose games like that in a big favorite role.
I'm looking at their numbers. It's wild how they won this game. They were outgained 429 to 226. They rushed for 61 yards. Their leading rusher had 22 yards. Oh, by the way, their starting quarterback, Drew Pine, didn't play in this game. They were 2 for 12 on third downs. How did they win this football game? It's unbelievable. Yes, the postgame win expectancy per SP Plus was 22.9%. But that's what Toledo does. I did take a little nibble on Bowling Green, not money line, but they were down early. I'm like, I didn't even watch the game. I'm like, whatever. It wasn't like an official play or anything like that. Toledo laying double digits is something that I can't get on board with ever. And it worked out in my benefit there. But
so I will say this. If Toledo loses this week, Jason Candle will be fired immediately after the game.
Because who do they play, Adam?
They play Kent State, who, by the way...
Wait, I'm sorry. Are you talking about the juggernaut that is Kent State that just lambasted UMass? I don't know. That's a tricky spot there for the Rockets.
We talked about it on the show last week. The fact that Kent State was a favorite over UMass when they hadn't won an FBS game since November 26, 2022... And they didn't just go out there and win. I mean, as you mentioned, they obliterated UMass. I mean,
42-6.
I don't know. I feel like I greatly appreciate that soccer leagues, you know, internationally have relegation. My God, relegate UMass to NAIA after that kind of performance.
I did throw that game. I do hidden.
So are
gem.
You betting Kent State this week?
No, I'm not going to bet Kent State this week.
I will say, no one notices this except for me because no one cares about Kent State. I think Drew DeShields, their quarterback, can actually play a little bit, at least better than the guys that they've had over the last 3-4 seasons. So I have had to upgrade their power rating a little bit here of late. He's actually playing really, really well. I'm right on the number at 26.5, so I'm happy with that. But Kent State might actually have a quarterback now.
Is he related to Delino DeShields?
I don't know. It's a good question.
By the way, the Bear, Chris Felica, did let us know that the favorite role for Kent State snapped a stretch of 27 consecutive games as a underdog to FBS opponents. The last time they were favored was in 2022, which I think was around the same time that they won their last game against an FBS team. That was Sean Lewis over there at Kent State. Adam, looking at just this upcoming week, you do a great job writing up the weekday games as well. So quickly, let's briefly go through some of the weekday games. We'll bypass the Tuesday games unless you want to hit on them, because that'll give this a little bit limited shelf life. But we've got Delaware and Jacksonville State on Wednesday, UTEP and Sam Houston on Wednesday, Tulsa, East Carolina on Thursday. Anything jump out from a weekday standpoint this week?
Again, I think Conference USA kind of challenges the thought that any football is better than no football, because these are not going to be well-played football games. These are just not good teams at all. I do wish we had some kind of cool name for weeknight Conference USA action, because I mean, we've had MACtion for 15 years now. I wish we had something. So Delaware and Jacksonville State is a game that I did preview and wrote up just before we started recording here, so that's posted over at vsin.com. I like Jacksonville State plus the 2.5. I mentioned they made a quarterback change to Caden Creel, who's been good, better than Gavin Wimsett was when he was starting for Jacksonville State. So I don't think that the upgrade at quarterback is properly being accounted for in the market. So I do like Jacksonville State in that one. If you want to know how bad things are for Sam Houston State right now, UTEP is a road favorite. I mean, UTEP is awful. But Sam Houston State is worse. I knew that Phil Longo hire wouldn't work out in year one. They're just not equipped to run an air raid style offense like Longo wants to. But my God, I can't lay a road price with UTEP. Not a chance. Tulsa and East Carolina. This feels like a lot for East Carolina to lay, right? I mean, Tulsa's been very up and down. And, you know, I realize that their win against Oklahoma State is not aging terribly well. But at the same time, like, Tulsa's nowhere near as talented as an Oklahoma State is going to be, even if Mike Gundy lost control of that program and all of that. But Tulsa is 0-3 in conference games, also lost to New Mexico State out of Conference USA, so I get it, but that's a big number. I'm going to end up taking Tulsa at 17.5. It's too much. I have it 13.5, so I think I'm going to have to
play a little bit. I think it's a little bit of a letdown, too. East Carolina was up on Tulane and let that. It was a wacky game.
It was a weird game. Yeah.
But Tulane ultimately was able to pull that out. Real quickly, before we dive into your best bets, the American continues to just be really intriguing. Somehow, some way, Navy beat Temple. The Owls still got there. And then Navy goes for two. They're a really fun team to watch. Obviously, they have a game against Notre Dame in early November that could catapult them into really good sitting for the playoff. But I like to update the G5 playoff odds. Memphis is plus 250. South Florida, how about that performance on Friday night? They go into Denton and they dominated North Texas. North Texas was a team that I was high on preseason. I don't know if they were there yet to compete, and clearly they weren't. So the two shortest odds are Memphis and South Florida. Then it's Tulane at 4-1. A little bit further down is going to be Navy 10-1. And then the Sun Belt really took a big hit this weekend. I was mad at myself keeping tabs on those scores because JMU and Old Dominion play on Saturday. Massive game, huge implications. I think we talked about on the podcast, Adam. Both of them had clear look-ahead spots. James Madison survived theirs against Louisiana. Old Dominion, they did not. They got hammered by Marshall on the road as a 14.5 point favorite. So Old Dominion's chances to make the playoff are done. And JMU, that does not help their cause because they already have a loss to Louisville. So it feels like it's going to be AAC or bust unless UNLV pulls off the stunner over Boise State this weekend.
Yeah, so the big thing about that South Florida and North Texas game, and I wrote about this, and I was on South Florida in that one plus the 1.5. And of course, anytime you take a plus 1.5, I'm going to sprinkle the money line there as well. But according to Jeff Sagarin, going into that game, South Florida played the 39th toughest schedule in the country. North Texas had played the 115th. So this was one where I was like, you know what? Maybe North Texas is good. And I did. I wrote up the American Conference for our college football betting guide. I liked this North Texas team a lot, but there was some smoke and mirrors in those numbers. And it's going to be very important going forward here to think about some of these strength of schedule discrepancies now that we're into conference play. I prefer Sagarin's strength of schedule numbers to anywhere else. Where if there's somewhere else you want to get them from, that's fine. But make sure you keep that in mind. And I also think that, you know, for South Florida and for Alex Golish, like, maybe they're starting to think style points too, right? I mean, 54-26 against Charlotte. They run up 63 on North Texas. They'll have the chance to run it up on Florida Atlantic this week if they want to. And then they get Memphis. So that's going to be, you know, the massive game here in the American Conference where they're on the road to take on a team that's seemingly thriving with all that FedEx money that they have in their NIL collective. So, I mean, this conference is really, really intriguing for a variety of reasons. And then, of course, last year, you think about, you know, I mean, Tulane was in position despite losing to Kansas State and, whoever the other team was that they lost to, Oklahoma. And then they just completely pissed it away at the end of the year. So we'll see what happens. But, South Florida's seemingly interested in style points. And that's something you want to keep in mind when they're going to be laying some big numbers because they are one of the higher profile teams in the American.
Yeah, you were right. It was K-State by a touchdown, and then they lost at Oklahoma. But then they rattled off 7 straight wins and looked very impressive doing so. They lost to Memphis on Thanksgiving and then got smashed by Army in West Point in the AAC championship game. So, yeah, it was a pretty lackluster finish to the season. Then Mensah hit the portal, and, you know, they lost to Florida in the bowl game. But, yeah, the American, it's going to be pretty intriguing down the stretch here, and it would be a surprise if they do not lock up one of the bids for the G5, unless, as I mentioned, UNLV goes to Boise, pulls off that upset, and then probably would have to beat Boise again later on the season. But I got my questions, certainly, regarding UNLV. Before we get out of here, Adam, any other games that you want to highlight that you wrote up for week 8?
Well, I think we should hit on a couple of those games that you were talking about for market correction or overreaction, because this is the time of year where you're going to see, you know, a lot of those different things, right? We have a lot of data points now of these teams, but also injuries are becoming a factor. Quarterback changes are becoming a factor. So I think looking at some of those games before we head out of here is going to be the best approach to take.
Yeah, no doubt. So so what games would you want to hit on here to close it out?
I mean, I think, you know, one that's coming up here on Friday, there are a lot of people that have no interest in backing Minnesota right now. You know, that Nebraska game against Minnesota opened 5.5 at Circa. It's run all the way out to as high as 9.5 in the market now. Circa's holding 9. I don't know your thoughts on that game. You know, obviously there's some things swirling now around the Nebraska program with that Penn State job open.
Yeah.
But people don't expect PJ Fleck to row the boat this week, I guess.
No, and they've kind of been a hard team to figure out this year. Not all that impressive. By the way, speaking of Friday night, I know we've gone long here, but is this the spot Miami gets tripped up? Is this the Jeff Brohm special, or is Miami just on another level? I kind of lean towards the latter, but at 14, I'm intrigued to always back a Jeff Brohm team as a big dog. Don't like backing Jeff Brohm as a favorite, but curious about this spot. I know Louisville's dealt with some injuries this year, but, you know, maybe I need to stop doubting this Miami team at some point too.
I still have some PTSD about what Jeff Brohm did at Purdue when they were playing Ohio State, whatever year that was, 2018, 17, whenever that was. It's a possibility, right? I mean, Louisville's got a phenomenal running back in Isaac Brown. They've got Miller Moss, who, say what you will about how Miller Moss has played this year, I mean, he was at USC. I've been very disappointed in him and how he's played so far this year, but this is a talented football team. And, you know, I mean, for Miami, you know, I kind of liken this to sort of, you know, what we kind of saw from the Blue Jays, you know, against the Mariners here in the first two games of that series, where they beat the Yankees. They kind of get all the partying out of their system. They're off for 3-4 days. And then you got to flip the switch again. And the Mariners just kept on playing, right? Both of those games in Toronto were awful spots for Seattle. They won the 15-inning game, got to party a little bit, had to fly to Toronto on their off day, just went back to business as usual, and then played an earlier game on Monday, won that one anyway. So for Miami here, you get a bye after you beat Florida, and you play Florida State, you win that game by 6, you get another bye. So they've played one game in essentially a month from September 20th to October 17th. This might be a spot where they do struggle a little bit. I think that's a great call out by you and something that I will have to dig a little bit deeper into, especially because we are getting, you know, if you shop around, as much as a 14-point head start on the Cardinals.
Yeah, I took a 14 just a little bit. It wasn't a big bet, but I, you know, that was a spot that I circled. But man, Miami, they continue to be very, very impressive so far this year. You know, situationally, another spot that I'm just curious about from a situational standpoint, and I'll dive into this a little bit more with Wes on the podcast on Wednesday. I'm really fascinated to see Oklahoma. Look, Texas was one of my favorite bets of the entire year. I just didn't believe this Mateer stuff, and he played and he was a shell of himself. He didn't want to run, couldn't throw the football, bad turnovers. How healthy is he going to be for this game on the road at South Carolina? Now, all that being said, Oklahoma still has an elite defense, and South Carolina has a very, let's just call it a mediocre offense, even though they've got Lenore Sellers. But situationally, Adam, off Red River, all that you had going into that game. And then next week they host Ole Miss. This is a weird spot to go to South Carolina. I kind of wish it was a night game at Williams-Brice, which we know can be a challenging environment. But, man, I'm really curious to see how Oklahoma responds here after that loss. And, you know, I mean, all we talked about last week, right, was will Mateer play? Oh, this doctor says he's going to play. Is he going to play? He's now questionable. He's now probable. I mean, was that exhausting to the team, all the questions that they heard? How do you respond here to South Carolina as a road favorite? I mean, they're laying 5.5 at South Carolina here in this spot.
Yeah, and, you know, again, when we talked about Mateer, we were like, okay, and even if he plays, is he going to be any good? And it turned out that the answer was no. Yeah, this is one that's moved up, too. I mean, this was 4, 4.5 kind of at open, and, you know, now it's out there. What, there was a, I think, a rogue 6 yesterday in the market. Obviously, this speaks to one thing in particular. The market hates South Carolina. They do not like this Gamecocks team at all. They didn't like them coming into the season. Felt like they kind of overachieved last year a little bit. Once again, playing one of the most difficult schedules in the country. And Lenore Sellers just, he's not a polished passer. I mean, obviously, he's a good runner, and he's not even really doing a ton of that this year. 70 carries for 117 yards. 1.7 yards per carry for him. Leads the team in rushing attempts. But he's not getting any kind of chunk plays out of it. And, of course, you know, South Carolina's offensive coordinator from last year, Dowell Loggins, taking the App State job, and the Mountaineers aren't any good this year. But, you know, he had an offensive coordinator change, and it's kind of cratered, you know, a really talented dual-threat guy like Sellers. And this defense, as admirable as it is, as much as it goes out there and fights, I mean, if you're going to score, you know, under 20 points a game, like, it's going to be very, very difficult for you. So, I think this is pretty telling, right? Because we all saw how bad John Mateer was in that game and goes out there and plays, which could probably stunt the healing process, you know, getting banged around and all that kind of thing. And yet people are just taking Oklahoma, especially early in the week where it is sharper action in nature. This isn't a public driven bet or line move or anything like that. It's telling. It's really telling. And so I mean, in terms of the theme of, you know, what we kind of talk about here, this feels like a market correction where I think that the team in the spotlight here is South Carolina, not Oklahoma.
And you start to wonder, too, you know, you mentioned it a couple weeks ago. Being in the SEC has its advantages, but is Shane Beamer at some point going to try to say, you know what? Winning at South Carolina on a regular basis is a pretty challenge. Maybe I'll take the parachute and go to where my dad made his name at Virginia Tech. So, yeah, very curious to see how that plays out. You wrote this game up, and you were on the money because it's moved that way. Auburn opened a 2.5-point favorite against Mizzou, and now Mizzou is the favorite at Auburn. Look, I was on Auburn last week, as I mentioned. The first half was pure domination, and then I've never seen a game change on one play like we did with that fumble, but everything changed and just flipped completely as Georgia won the game and, unfortunately for me, got the cover. I don't know how Auburn gets off the mat. And I think if Missouri goes in there and wins this game, it could be the end of the Hugh Freeze era as well. Jackson Arnold, man, he just ain't it, you know. And but Missouri, similarly, they had a tough loss, too. And this is the first road game of the year for Missouri. So how are they going to respond to a hostile environment? It's crazy to think on October 18th, you're playing your first road game. But we have seen the market correct back to where you thought this number should be, as Missouri now is the favorite against Auburn.
Yeah, I think this one makes sense. And I understand why people were a little bit skeptical of Missouri. I mean, their 5 wins are Central Arkansas, Kansas, Louisiana, South Carolina, and UMass. None of those, I guess Kansas is kind of playing up to expectation, but Louisiana's been much worse than they usually are. South Carolina hasn't looked any good. UMass is, I mean, Kent State beat UMass by the same score that Missouri did. So that's an interesting little note there. But look, I mean, this is a Missouri team that only lost by 3, going 1-for-11 on third down against Alabama. The defense played well, held the Crimson Tide to 326 yards. It was their first real litmus test. And even though they didn't win the game and they only had 14 first downs, the defense played really well and kept them in that one. So I think now you know, going out and taking on an Auburn team that has virtually no offense whatsoever, it makes sense that this one flipped. And I'm happy to see that it did, because like you said, it kind of falls in line with my power ratings. But yeah, I just... And again, Auburn, are they still doing the three different play caller thing based on the down and whatever? Like, I don't know what the hell they're doing there.
Well, I don't think they knew what they were doing in that second half, because they didn't do anything offensively in that second half. All right, Adam, we've been doing this for quite a while, so let's call it a day here. As always, read Adam's work over at vsin.com. And if you're still listening, please do give us a 5-star rating. You probably already have if you're still listening at this point in the podcast, but much appreciated. And just a reminder, we're up on YouTube, youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. Adam, any parting words here on the pod?
I'm pissed off we didn't talk about Akron and Ball State, but I guess I will.
You know
will,
what? We've gone long
I guess
enough.
I will let just it slide.
Akron. Give no, us give us what we got.
I have no idea. Ball State's bad, and yet they're favored in that game. But Akron, I mean, they're bad every year. But no, I mean, I honestly, I think this episode was shorter than last week's. So I don't know why you're harping so much on the time. I mean, look, just think, we would have gone 2 hours if you would have wanted to talk about Notre Dame. But I guess you didn't.
I mean, we could talk Notre Dame, too. Notre Dame, USC. By the way,
you have two other episodes this week to talk about Notre Dame, USC.
Notre Dame laying 10 makes you think, huh? A lot of people are going to try to put Circa out of business, apparently, with the responses that I saw coming in. So we'll see how that one goes. I don't care. Just win the damn game, and let's move on to hopefully making the college football playoff. But I tell you what, man, Notre Dame has a pretty legit quarterback. C.J. Carr, some of the passes that he makes. Our old colleague Mike Golick Jr. tweeted out a video of his throw to a tight end, one of the Notre Dame tight ends, and it was just unreal from the NC State game. That was a clunky game, by the way, by the Irish. The defense might have woken up a little bit, so we'll see. I know USC's dealing with a lot of injuries. I think they're down to their third or fourth string running back, but he's pretty legit too. So it's going to be a pretty charged up atmosphere, Adam, and we know how Lincoln Riley embraces travel. He loves it. He loves traveling. You know, he loves the peanuts that you get on the plane. He's just a big fan of hitting the trail.
Yeah, he just likes to have things to bitch and moan about. sorry I opened up that, you know, Pandora's box there with you being able to talk Notre Dame and keep everybody around for another 15 minutes. So,
all right.
My bad.
You mentioned it. We got more time to talk on the podcast. Let's wrap it up. Thanks to Wyatt. Thanks to Ryan, our producers. For Adam Burke, follow him at Skating Tripods. I'm at one Tim Murray. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode of the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast. Wes Reynolds, fresh off of a trip to Autzen Stadium. The Hoosier, are they going to be in a letdown spot? We'll ask that to Wes next. It is the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.